A good morning to everybody.
Good morning.
I'm really glad to have had some of the presentations already going ahead, because what I'll try to do is to present some research findings from the work of the One World Trust on accountability as a systemic issue, taking a little bit of a step back, but at the same time, what we've heard in the various presentations gives a lot of connection points to what I'll be saying. So maybe just very briefly, the One World Trust is an old organization. We were founded in 1951 by parliamentarians in the United Kingdom who took a special interest in issues of accountability and global governance. And that interest persists in amongst many parliamentarians, and we've been able to enlarge our client group in a way beyond the UK Parliament, also to many other parliamentarians around the world, particularly, for instance, around the accountability of organisations such as the World Bank as well. So how does this work? I just click. I don't have really anything to disclose, but I just wanted to thank the funders for the support that we've received for Foundation and a number of other foundations that have supported the research that I'm going to present here. And what's, I think, quite important to understand is when you're looking at issues of accountability, we're talking about a fundamental shift in terms of power relationships. Accountability, at least the way that we see it at the One World Trust, should not be an issue that is defined by the organization that holds the power, but should be defined by the citizens that actually are, you know, have to be able to demand accountability. But very often when we're looking at the way that organizations relate to accountability issues, they come from a perspective of saying, well, I'm special, it's my history, it's my legal construct that should define the way that I'm engaging with citizens. And in a way, they don't treat them as citizens, but very often as subjects of what they're doing. And so we've tried to turn that around with a project that we call Charter 99 for Global Democracy, where we developed a charter of common principles of accountability, trying to get participants in senior decision-making positions around the world, 4,500 signatories ahead of the Millennium Summit in 2000, to sign up to this idea that organizations should be guided by common principles of accountability that reflect the importance of the citizen demanding accountability rather than the organizations essentially defining accountability as an act of grace towards them. I think that's quite important to understand the background of this research. Now, why is this relevant? We've heard a lot about the various elements of the Paris Declaration and the Accra Agenda for Action. I think what I'd just like to highlight is that this is not a technical, or not just a technical issue. This is highly political, and actually the evaluation report of the progress on the Paris Declaration really makes this point, that this is about the fundamental relationship between people affected by powerful organizations, and it's not just donors, but it's also in programming and in policy development. So this is an essential political issue that we're dealing with. The global accountability framework that we use at the One World Trust to assess the capability of an organization to be accountable to people affected by its work has been developed in a multi-year consultation of consensus building with organizations from all sectors, and I'll come to that, what that means in a second. On the principles. It's been really important because we need to achieve buy-in for that instead of just imposing a framework of what we think accountability should be. It is very much about an ongoing identification of good practice principles. Whenever we talk about good practice principles of accountability, we're not asking for some ideal gold standard which is out there that nobody has ever reached, but we're talking about things that organizations have actually implemented, which means that another organization that does not live up to that good practice principle has actually no way of saying this can't be reached because their peers are already demonstrating that it can be done. And lastly, in order to assess capabilities to be accountable, you need to develop an a framework using broadly agreed indicators, because at the end of the day, you want organizations to buy into the logic of achieving progress. And what's also quite important is that when we're talking about capabilities, we're not just talking about policy commitments, because many people can say a lot of things that they want to do, including the Paris Declaration, but what we're really looking for when we're trying to assess the capabilities of an organization to be accountable to its stakeholders is what the management systems are that support those policy commitments. To give an example, an organization that says, for instance, we want to be transparent, they have a transparency policy, but then we're looking in detail of how is it disclosure-based, saying we are essentially putting all the information about our work into the public domain, except a narrow list of exclusions. And the more narrowly that list is defined, the more concrete it will be concretely possible for citizens to say, you are denying me access to this information, but I actually would like to have it. Now, does the organization have a system in place that allows people to challenge a decision to deny them access to information, for instance? So it's important to look at the interplay between policy and the management systems that support these things. The accountability language we have found very useful because it's a platform language. It allows organizations, particularly civil society and NGOs, who use rights-based language to come and join others. They are talking very often about just disability and enforcement of standards. If you go to a corporate entity who are also involved in service delivery and development, for instance, they will say, well, rights-based approaches are very often not for me. It's not my language. I don't want to be tied in. But with accountability, they can live with, because they know that accountability from the perspective of corporate reporting is something that they know already. Similarly, in the political sphere, legitimacy, issues of mandating and representation are familiar words, and so they are able to join the accountability debate from their perspective. As I said, making accountability manageable is to break down what accountability means. I've briefly shown our accountability framework, where we are trying to really understand the different dimensions of accountability. So it's not just about transparency itself. We've seen the failure of relying on transparency for accountability when it comes to the global financial crisis. The fact that I'm telling people what I'm doing does not constrain me in what I do. So we need other dimensions as well: participation, evaluation and learning, and also the handling of complaints, which is the real litmus test of how much, as an organization, I'm willing to be accountable to people who have a problem with what I'm doing. We need to understand organizational reform as a matter of policies and systems. So we're trying to, first of all, render commitments visible. But then also, we need to make sure that the systems enable staff and stakeholders to actually follow through on the commitments of the organization. And with our research on accountability, we'd like to, in a way, the capability testing to generate some self-regulatory benchmarks against which organizations can be held to account. Taking an example, for instance, the NGO network on the Asian Development Bank very often has substantive concerns about what the organization does, but it finds it very hard to hold the organization itself to account for what it does, because there is no, or there wasn't until recently, until we did it, no assessment of what the organizational capability was to be accountable, in the sense of what are the policy commitments, what are the management systems that support the policy commitments. So in a way, the benchmarking exercise that we conduct for global organizations, including many who are involved in development work, allows case study work to then contribute more meaningfully to the very difficult task of fully and accurately and soundly capturing the practice of vast organizations. And it'd be very interesting to see whether people have ideas of how a practice assessment, for instance, of an organization such as the UNDP could actually be methodologically and soundly be conducted, because they're so vast and they're operating under so many different circumstances, from, you know, maybe easier countries such as Ghana to countries like Burma. So practice assessments, harmonizing, you know, driving people to harmonize practice, demands that we understand what the capabilities of an organization are before we move ahead. I've talked a little bit of what we mean by policies, written documents and policies through which an organization makes a commitment, and that can be assessed in their existence and in their quality, and the systems which are about leadership, for instance, senior executive oversight, the resources made available for training staff, but also the accessibility, dissemination, translation of policies and other things. We assess every year 30 global organizations in terms of their accountability capabilities. We've started with a pilot report in 2003, and this year we're doing the third full assessment in 2008. This is not a ranking, but I just thought I'd show which organizations we're looking at, and I think that's also where it's important to look at the issue of cross-sector. When we talk cross-sector, we're talking about intergovernmental organizations such as the UNDP, the World Bank, the IMF, or the UNHCR, but we're also talking about transnational corporations such as, in the column 2008, you will see, for instance, DPWN, which is Deutsche Post WorldNet, which is essentially the holding company for DHL. DHL is an enormously important actor in providing relief services because of their world-spanning logistical capacity. So we need to understand that when we're talking about accountability in the delivery of development, we need to look at organizations from all sectors, including also international NGOs, where this year we'll be looking, for instance, at the International Planned Parenthood Federation, Plan International Care, Transparency International, Catholic Relief Services, and last year we looked at, for instance, Mercy Malaysia and the Aga Khan Foundation, Christian Aid. So I think it's quite useful to hold organizations who in their own way exercise power to common principles across sectoral boundaries. The key findings, and there's a lot of detail that we could go into, I think, is that when we look at the capabilities of organizations, we find that for several years now, we found that different types of organizations lead on different areas, different dimensions of accountability. So, for instance, many international NGOs are actually not that strong on transparency, which is in a way quite surprising, because many of civil society organizations place great value on demanding transparency from others. We have also found that, for instance, when it comes to complaints and response mechanisms, it's very often corporate actors that actually lead the way in terms of the policies and management systems that they have in place, while particularly international NGOs quite often come back to us and say, a complaints mechanism for an external stakeholder? We're working on that, but we actually don't have it. And I just want to bring one short example from my time when I was working at Amnesty. I was working in South Africa, and there was a case where a South African national organization, civil society organization, campaigning on HIV and AIDS, used the face of a woman living with HIV and AIDS in a national campaign. The lady had not given her consent. And now, it's startling. The lady said, I want you to campaign. Please, this is a really important issue. Everybody needs to have access to drugs that enable me and others to continue to live. but please ask for my consent. Now, because the organization didn't have a complaints handling mechanism, the only way the lady felt she was able to address the issue was to take the organization to court. Now, the damage done to the organization and potentially to the cause of campaigning for better access to antiretroviral drugs could have been huge if there had been no out-of-court settlement eventually. But what it shows is that to have an effective complaints and response mechanism that is meant to solve a problem rather than just kind of tell people to go away with their problem in place is really, really important. And I think that shows that NGOs have as much to live up to such principles as other organizations as well. And this example is not meant to criticize civil society organizations for a failure. It just shows that it's not just of corporates that we need to demand a complaints mechanism, but we also as civil society organizations need to work on this. The major accountability challenges that we have found is really that intergovernmental organizations very often have problems of equitable member control. Debates around quota-based voting in the IMF, we know what that means, that very often the countries that are most affected by the work of the IMF have the least power to actually influence the policies of the IMF. That is a problem. External stakeholder participation is also an area where intergovernmental organizations need to do better, and external complaints handling as well. International NGOs have said it, transparency and complaints handling. Transnational corporations, particularly bad in transparency, social impact evaluation, and external stakeholder participation as well. But as positive results, we've seen there is a lot of potential for cross-sector learning, because in each different sector, there is leadership that we can see. NGOs should look towards the corporate sector to look at what a good complaints handling policy can be in some cases. And what we're also finding is that even though people at first said, well, you know, cross-sector assessments, it's very difficult because organizations are so specific. Thank you. There is an increasing buy-in for this cross-sector review because people understand, particularly in the provision of development aid, that they are partners in one endeavor, which I think is really showing through on the increasing number of organizations that sign up to the principles of the Paris Declaration, which are not bilateral donors for whom the Paris Declaration was originally intended. What's the outlook? Strengthening ownership, limiting conditionality, providing direct budget support, but we've heard it from Elizabeth Sander, is also finding ways to better trace where funding goes in relation to results. And that is a huge problem. A couple of years ago, there was, for instance, a major report of the National Audit Office in the United Kingdom that was sparked by a report from the Department for International Development, DFID, which is one of the major bilateral aid donors in the world, who made a claim about how much funding had gone to support work against the impact of HIV/AIDS. And the National Audit Office really challenged them and said, well, actually, this is a completely fictional figure because you have no way of proving that the money that you have given to through direct budget support is actually ending up in this. You have to rely essentially on the statement of the host government of where the government has gone, of where the money has gone. But the host government itself had very little reporting capacities itself in place. And so, again, when it comes to accountability issues, demonstrating and strengthening capabilities is very much about not just making a policy commitment, but about then actually testing the organizations involved in the chain for their capabilities in their management systems as well. Information disclosure is another key point to strengthen accountability when it comes to funding, programming, and policy development in development aid. We need more disclosure-based transparency policies that have a narrow set of exclusions, not things that we see all around in many organizations would say, we will disclose everything we'll do except the things that are confidential. Now, it sounds very funny, but those are real examples. You have organizations who say things like that without realizing that that actually really undermines their capability to be accountable to people. So this is why setting a narrow set of exclusions is a really important first step towards being more open about what you're doing. External stakeholder engagement, particularly the area of committing to respond to comments that are being made during an engagement process, and also justifying, for instance, why you are not taking on board certain criticisms. For instance, if you have a stakeholder engagement process and civil society organizations are telling you this is not working, then don't just go ahead with what you planned anyway. If you're not taking on board their comments, then provide a rationale for why you haven't done it. And maybe I'll skip the impact evaluation point because we've talked about that briefly. Governance structures that reflect values. Last year we had a stab at multi-donor trust funds, which are an increasingly used vehicle in funding for post-disaster and post-conflict reconstruction work. These funding vehicles very often continue to favor structurally powerful actors and fail to include civil society at decision-making level. An example, the multi-donor trust fund for Sudan, which is primarily intended to support people in Darfur affected by the conflict, gives more power to the government in Khartoum to have stop-and-go power decision-making than to any civil society organizations active in Darfur about what the program orientation should actually be that is being funded through the multi-donor trust fund, and these things are problematic. We've talked about the role of parliamentary oversight, which I think is very, very important, and if there are any questions around that, we can come to that later. And if you have any more questions about our work, don't hesitate to contact us. Especially also my project leader, Robert Lloyd, would also be very happy to have your comments on this work. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Michael. Now I'd like to welcome